also the legend. So plenty of action with the doubles and the mix getting into the meaty part of their competitions. But when it comes to the singles main draw, by the end of today, our quarterfinal lineup will be complete. Our focus begins on Philippe Chatrier. So let's get the introductions for the first match of the day.
Première joueuse à rentrer sur le court est 36e mondiale aujourd'hui. Elle est américaine. Voici Bernarda Pera.
Bernarda Pera makes her way out onto Philippe Chatrier. Those highlighter yellow shoes, the same colour of the tennis balls, and resplendent in a white outfit, yellow on the racket bag. The American will make her way to the first chair that she comes to. And she is up against this lady about to be introduced out onto court, Philippe Chatrier.
Elle s'est reposée à la numéro 7 mondiale, double finaliste en Grand Chelem l'an passé, la Tunisienne Once Jabeur.
A little smile from Once Jabeur. She made her way through the tunnel, a little wave to the crowd, a former junior champion here at Roland Garros. She'll make her way to the bench at the far end of the court. So the matches today are split. This is our last 11 o'clock start. Goes to midday tomorrow, but they're split between Philippe Chatrier and Susan Longland. Sara Cerebes-Tormo, who had a walkover against Lena Rybakina's controversy in the doubles. She's up against Beatriz Haddad Maia, the Brazilian, and the Spaniard has just been welcomed out on to Susan Longland. So we're going to be keeping an eye on that. We will try and, if things work out, the focus here on Philippe Chatrier, but we will try and bring you the main points from Susan Longland. Then after the Jabeur match, we will be following where the story is. Casper Ruud, Nicholas Jarry here, Anna Karolina Shmedlova, Coco Gauff here, the night session, Sasha Zverev, Grigor Dimitrov, on Susan Lenger and Holger Rune, Francisco Cerúndolo, Iga Swiatek, Leszek Sorenko, and Thomas Edgery, and Yoshihito Nishioka. So the stage is set. Gigi Salmon with Stefan, as always, on the buttons, alongside Marcus Buckland and Simon Cambers. How are we, gentlemen, this fine morning?
Well, I'm just glad to be here on time because my watch stopped and I was sitting downstairs thinking I had 20 minutes and actually it was 5 minutes.
So did you do stairs or lift?
A lift. It was okay. Have a photo,
yeah? Yeah, no, you did. I thought it was absolutely perfect timing. And I saw Marcus in the media room downstairs gathering together your bits and pieces.
Yeah, you were just sitting there having a chat, planning your day.
She's not stalking players.
Well, I've got a... No, that's later. The stalking comes later. I will be revealing times of players. And I've got a seaweed wrap booked in. It takes about 3 or 4 hours.
Is that to eat?
You don't normally eat it afterwards. I wouldn't advise eating it afterwards. I was having a chat with Lucy Arle, friend and colleague who's working on the world feed. She's first up on Susan Longland. So just seeing how she's been getting on. It's normally early in the morning when you get in that you see friends and colleagues in the media room. So it's nice to have a couple of minutes catch up. And then I saw Marcus and I thought, all right, better get him upstairs to the commentary box.
I'm just glad you have time to sit around chatting with friends. Some of us are prepping, making absolutely sure we're ready for a busy day of tennis, Simon.
I had a big meeting this morning, ITF Media Commission, talking about all things tennis. So I had to get up even earlier than normal.
Oh.
Outrageous.
If I had a little violin, I mean, yours would be minuscule.
I've got one.
Marcus, yours would be minuscule. Just sort of minuscule little violin. But as long as you get your three-course meals in, you will be fine. But we have tennis, we have glorious weather, we have a quarterfinal lineup to go. What's the match you're both looking forward to the most today? What's the one, if you had to recommend, all of them are going to be fabulous, if you had to recommend one from the schedule, which one and why?
That's a very good question because they've all got different points of potential interest. Yep. I am looking forward to seeing how Grigor Dimitrov does tonight against Sasha Zverev because he's breezed through so far. He made his first final in 5 years last week. Zverev, of course, is going to be playing under the lights for the third time. Came through against Francis Tiafoe in four sets. What was it? Two nights ago, obviously. And, you know, he looked good where he had to. And I'd expect him to beat Dimitrov tonight. But he's rested the Bulgarian. He's got a renewed sense of belief. So I don't know about you, Simon, but I'm interested in that. I'm also looking forward to seeing Ons Jabeur. And I still can't quite believe that of the four slams, the only one that she has not reached the quarterfinals at is here at Roland Garros.
Yeah.
But what a chance today.
Well, and she loves this place. When she was a junior, I will always come back to this. She was in floods of tears the year she lost in the final. Absolutely. I was interviewing her because I was interviewing all the juniors that year. for the ITF, and it's a really hard, delicate situation to manage. But she was desperately disappointed, and then when she came back the following year and won, she was so overjoyed. This is the place she loves most of all. And so, and her game is so well suited to play.
Yeah.
So you think she should be able to do it. I'm looking forward to it. I don't think she played that well last time. Danilovic was a surprise to me. She played really well. So looking forward to seeing that. Looking forward to seeing Coco Gauff build on good win over Mirandreva, last year's finalist. Maybe she's going to get there again. And like you, Marcus, I'm interested to see whether Dimitrov can step it up against Zverev. He's looking the part with his new Lacoste outfit. He's endearing himself to the French public even more. But I'm not sure he can do it.
Interviewing the junior players when they've just lost must be quite tricky. Is it true? I heard, Simon, that she was absolutely fine, and then you went in with the microphone and said, what the hell went wrong on?
So tell me, why did you let your country down? You know, it's that kind of question.
And you wonder why the players sometimes don't want to face the press. No, I'm sure Simon was absolutely lovely. You are so mischievous.
Sorry.
From the moment you come on the radio to the moment you step off the radio. Marcus is, though, going to be doing a little bit more radio miking in week two.
Yes, I'm... Obviously, and we have said to you, and wherever you are in the world, if there's a junior in particular that you'd like more information on, please do get in touch with us. Obviously, we've got our Brit hat on. I saw Hannah Klugman yesterday, and without wishing to be too biased, she's 14 years of age. She's had an amazing junior career already. She won very comfortably yesterday. So depending on the schedule, I'm definitely going to go out with the pack tomorrow and see how she fares. But we don't want to just focus on our favourites. So if there's one player in particular that you're interested in, do get in touch. You can tweet us at @radio_rg, and you can email us frenchopenradio@fft.fr, and we'll put the spotlight on your favourite player.
And that's the first time that Marcus hasn't read the email address in the Twitter account, which means by day 9 you've remembered it. What are you laughing at, you two? What are you snickering at?
He's a couple of children. Childish.
Oh yes, Marcus, that may be a player you should follow a little bit later.
There is one. I'll come to that in a minute. There is,
right,
a player.
Tennis. We have one player. Okay, we've got one player. So we're half there. We're half ready on Philippe Chatrier. We are a couple of minutes behind on Susan Longlin. Marcus and Simon are with you. Marcus has told you how to get in touch. The sun is shining. We're going to have tennis all day. We look forward to company. Don't forget to get in touch.
Thank you, Gigi. Enjoy your seaweed wrap.
Sounds lovely. Coming to this, you're talking about people that worth watching.
Talk
about Hannah Klugman, who was she runner-up at Le Petit Zat, I think, the famous...
She certainly went very deep.
She was in the final.
Yep.
She's a very, very promising British player, which is great. But there's a young Dutch boy, also 14, called Gijs Boekhard, who in February had won 30 straight matches on the junior tour.
Wow.
Now he won his first round yesterday. He's in doubles action today. He is well worth watching. The Dutch are getting quite excited already.
Well, I mean, it's amazing how quickly you can burst onto the scene as a tennis player at the age of, 13 or 14. There is pressure from the word go. Certainly Hannah Klugman seems to be able to deal with all of that.
And Kaylin Biggin is back in action today.
Yes.
I shouldn't be smiling and chuckling like a child.
You are a schoolboy, Mr. Canvas, really.
But if he makes it, he's going to have to be a very good player, that's all I can say.
Yeah, Kaylin is playing doubles today with Alessandra Teodosecco. Oh, my goodness me. I'm going to send you out to do that one. Ball-by-ball commentary. Actually, no, that's not... Kaylin Biggin's playing doubles with Hayden Jones.
That's better.
And, in fact, Hayden, who lost in the first round of singles yesterday, has a sister called Emerson Jones, who beat Rana Stoiber, who's a British player, yesterday. And one of the most difficult things for the Jones family yesterday, Simon, was that the two were put on at the same time.
Oh, yeah. Were both parents here, or did one have to run
I went to watch Emerson, and her dad was watching, so I imagine that Mum, who I believe is a former Olympic athlete, may well have been watching Hayden.
I mean, how many times have we seen, especially in the last 20, 30 years, players generally come from obviously sporting backgrounds, but elite sporting grounds. So many Olympians in the extended families of a lot of the Eastern Europeans, especially.
Yeah, it's in the blood. Emerson is only 14 years of age. I was talking to one of my friends or contacts from Tennis Australia, and they said, parents are great to really hard-working children, and who knows how far they'll go, but I'm going to keep an eye on Emerson because she beat Rana Stoiber, who is another very talented British junior, in three sets. Stoiber took the second, and I'm thinking, oh, the balance of power has shifted decisively in favour of the Brit. But Emerson, who'd been, she'd just been chuntering a little bit towards the end of the second set, showed her steely resolve, which you'd expect from an Australian, of course.
Is she named after Roy Emerson, by any chance?
Well, that's a really good question.
It's an unusual name.
I didn't want to go up and sort of irritate the father at that stage, but maybe that's something we should...
Yeah.
Are you doing the junior interviews again this year?
I'm not doing them, but I did interview yesterday the number one seed in the juniors, in the girls, Sarah Saito of Japan, who is a very nice girl, doesn't speak much English yet, but seemed to enjoy the attention of having a few microphones shoved in her face. But we were very nice and just asking her a little bit about herself. There's a Japanese journalist doing a bit of translation for us, Aki, so that was great. She seemed very nice. And she's a contemporary of Mira Andreeva. She's the same age as her.
Right.
And she's actually beaten her once. They played twice. They won all. And she said that when she beat her, that made her feel like she could be a tennis player.
So lots going on away from Court Philippe Chatrier, but that's where we're going to turn our attention to now, because Ons Jabeur actually has made the best possible start. She has broken the Bernarda Pera serve, first time up. They've just changed ends. They've had a rather longer break after one game than they should have. We've mentioned it a few times. It's a bit of a bugbear of mine because we're looking to speed up tennis. And really, after the first game, you should simply walk around the net and get on with it. But we now have a break. They'll towel themselves down, they'll have a drink, and another minute or two is taken up.
It is a bit strange, but back in a long time ago, people used to just, we'd sit down straight away after the first game for a minute and a half or 2 minutes.
But true.
It has changed. And I always feel with this discussion about speeding up tennis, when you're in the stadium, you never think that. You never feel like they're taking too long between points, or that the, because it's building a drama and you're part of it. I think it's only on TV when we talk about it a lot, or on radio, that it becomes an issue in general.
Well, it's not that particular issue is not a big one for me. I think, and again, I've mentioned this a couple of times with Jabeur serving at 15 love. I do think that certainly if you're in the upper tier, a spectator should be allowed to come and go when they please and not have to wait, especially at the start of a match, for three games if you've just missed the start for whatever reason.
Well, I'm not sure whether it's happening. They are keeping them out at the moment in the top tier, and the players can't see those people.
No.
And they're not getting any way of the action, whereas actually on the press seats, which are just below us, we can come and go, which I think is good. What's the word? They're not ushers, but they're stewards.
Yeah.
The stewards are doing a good job there because they can't see us, the players. So what's the problem?
Ace from Jabeur, so she's gone to 30-15. She's playing a forehand that's, it clipped the top of the tape and bounced back her side. So Pera, who is a tall left-hander, elegant-looking player with those very bright yellowish-green shoes, white visor, white tennis outfit with a blue stripe down it, is watching, and she's got a second serve that she might be able to attack possibly, and she's going with a huge forehand straight back at Jabeur. Mid-court ball for Pera. Up goes a high ball from Jabeur, and the put away is very straightforward for Pera, and she's got a break back point immediately.
You said she is a very elegant player. She's got nice style. I think a lot of left-handers are very stylish, just in the way that their body shapes to hit the ball. Maybe it's the contrast with right-handers, I don't know, but she's got lovely sort of flowing strokes, and she's good moving forward as Pera too.
And she's returning down the middle of the court. Now she's playing a double-handed backhand. Oh, she tried to take that across court to the Jabeur forehand, but she's netted.
Yeah, she'll want to try and get on the board early in this match. It was interesting doing the Sabalenka Stevens match last night. Crazy match, 5-love, 5-all. Just the way that tennis scoring system is so great that you're never out of it until you're completely beat.
Backhand cross-court return is wide from Pera, so now game point for Jabeur. The authorities must have been panicking at 5-love in that first set last night.
Yeah, absolutely. It was about 17 minutes or something.
Jabeur with a good first serve, the return's into the net, so she saves the break back point and holds and leads by two games to love after 6 minutes. Talking of speed of matches, this is a third encounter between the two players. Long time since the last one, which was in 2019 in China. Now, Pera won that on a hard court, 6-4, 6-3, in an hour and 90 minutes. According to the day notes, their other meeting in Daytona Beach in 2016 on a clay court was won by Ons Jabeur, 6-2, 7-6. She won the tiebreak by 8 points to 6. Duration of the match, 0 minutes.
That's impressive.
It is. They really were going quickly that day. Now, the drop shot from Jabeur, we know she loves them, but she's got that one wrong. Her backhand drop shot lands in the net.
Yeah, back to that. Let's have a look at five love up and you know, authorities being worried about a short match and not enough value for the fans. It was great that Stevens fought back, and it became a really good match, actually. And also, the atmosphere last night was great. It was a packed crowd. The DJ did a great job of putting good music on. They were staying alive, bit of Bee Gees, bit of Elton John. The crowd were really getting into it. I think they really enjoyed that match last night, and we were very close to it going three sets, which would have been fitting, I think.
Yeah. But well done to Aryna Sabalenka, who remains on course not only to become champion here, but to get to number one in the world. We've got so many things to look forward to in week two as Jabeur plays a forehand to the forehand side of her left-handed opponent. The slice backhand drop shot's a good one this time from Jabeur. Oh, but Pera gets there. Not only does she show speed, but she shows wonderfully soft hands to reply in kind. Or
I think it was on the second bounce.
Oh.
Because Jabeur... Oh, did she get there? I mean, I thought she got there in person. No, I don't think she did, because Jabeur was busy shaking her racket like she won the point. I didn't hear the umpire say not up,
which they
normally do, but I think it was such a good drop shot that she didn't quite get there.
I was amazed that she played it in the manner that she did.
And it was very close to Jabeur. I think Jabeur could have hit it.
No, good spot, Simon. So it's 15-all. And a slightly wild first serve. Two ball boys almost collide, desperate for that ball. Like a couple of alligators snapping for a fish.
Or pigeons.
Well, we're not allowed to mention them anymore. Forehand cross court from Pera. The slice backhand's going to drift.
Oh.
No, it isn't going to drift wide. That's unbelievable. The moment that Jabeur sliced that backhand, I was convinced it was going to slide into the tram lines. But no, it finished inside the court.
It was the one before was in the similar area, similar vein, but not as good as that. That was unstoppable.
The Tunisian magician is producing her tricks already. 15:30, Pera, first serve into the net. We'll keep you up to speed with Sara Sorribes-Tormo, who's had a lot to think about overnight. She's playing Beatrice Haddad-Meyer on Suzanne Longlin. Early stages of that one as well, of course. And that's a double fault from Pera.
She's had a funny tournament, really, Sorribes-Tormo, having the walkover early on in the singles and then the incident in the doubles yesterday with the default. So, yeah, sort of broken, not the usual rhythm that you would have in a slam.
15:40, and Pera with a double-handed backhand with her plus-one shot. Now she's playing a forehand to the backhand side of Jabeur. It's another drop shot. It's just too good. Pera sort of set off for a moment and then realised she had no chance of getting there. All the tricks, all the magic, and a double break for Jabeur. And they've barely been on the court for 10 minutes.
When you're as good as playing drop shots as Jabeur is, you can do it any time you like. But she's smart. She hit them. This is from the end into the wind. Gives her a little bit more room to work with. But all three of those were perfectly struck. And I would say that even though that's a big part of her game anyway, I think she's clearly identified that Pera maybe struggles to move forward or pick that up.
Yep, certainly looks that way. Pera is currently ranked at 36 in the world. This time last year, she was 116. So far, she's beaten Annette Contaveit, who's fallen a little from the heady heights of a couple of years ago when she had that magnificent end to the season.
She was number two,
yeah,
briefly.
Donna Vekic was her victim in the second round, and then Elisabetta Cacciaretto was dispatched 6-4, 7-6 in an hour and 41 minutes in the third round. As for Ons, it was Lucia Bronzetti first of all, then Ossian Dodin, and then Simon mentioned the match against Olga Danilovic, where she wasn't at her best, had to come from a set down. Took her over 2 hours to win 4-6, 6-4, 6-2. Total duration on court, 4 hours and 33 minutes, which is just under an hour less than Pera, 5 hours and 19 minutes. But the way things are going today, Pera is not going to be on court for very long, but not for reasons that she would like.
Red Sox Devil's been in touch. He's just saying that, Marcus, you mentioned the other day that you think that for the double bounces in particular, the umpire should have access to a video view. I agree.
Definitely. It's so difficult. Yeah. The umpires can't tell. The players can't tell. And sometimes it can almost look as though the player's cheating, and they don't know. It's a little like in cricket sometimes. That's a really good return from Perez. Sometimes when you make a catch, but it's really close to the ground, you as the fielder are not sure whether it's gone in on the full, on the fly, as they say, or a very sort of awkward half volley. So
yeah, or exactly the same time as it hits the grass.
Yeah, so I do think, I mean, we use technology for a lot of reasons in different sports. Sometimes I think when we don't need to. And then there are other occasions when it's just crying out to be used. That's better from Perez. He forced Jabeur wide on a forehand. And the Tunisian off balance a little goes long. So it's 15-30.
Yeah, I think it would be good also in that instance the other day where Cameron Norrie foot-faulted across the centre line. That's such a difficult decision for a linesman to make that the umpire could have a look back at that just to double check.
Actually, it was Dan Evans, wasn't
Dan Evans, yes.
Dan Evans. And then Norrie was involved in the double bounce. Yeah. Second serve now from Jabeur. Wild return from Perra at 15-30. I mean, you've got to be aggressive, I know, but she was a little bit of a hot-headed return.
Yeah, she's missed a few by quite a long way.
Jabeur all business, ready again at 30-all and serving down the middle. The return is a decent one, and this time it's Jabeur who errs going long on her forehand side and just looks up to the blue skies for a moment in frustration.
I don't think Ons Jabeur has played her best yet in this tournament. You know, she's got through some tough matches in an impressive manner in that sense, but she's not sort of flowed that much. But so far today, it's been a step up.
Well, it's a good sign for her, of course, if she's building round by round. That's a better return from Perra. She's onto her forehand again, up the line. Jabeur will cover that across court. And, I thought a little bit of luck was going to come Perra's way as her backhand clipped the top of the tape, but it deflected wide.
I think that was a poor choice of shot, really. She'd played a good rally, but then if she was going to go for a winner there, she had to hit the perfect shot. She would have been better advised, I think, to have carried on, stayed in the rally and waited for an easier chance.
Jabeur's first serve has gone wide. Ons has already lasted 8 days more than 12 months ago when she was beaten on the first Sunday, barely before lunch had been digested. That's a double fault.
Avantage.
It must be horrible to lose on the Sunday because so many tournaments start on the Monday, you don't even feel like you're in it.
No. Well, she admitted that. And I think she was very pleased that her campaign this year did not begin until the Tuesday.
Yeah.
Now, a bit of support, perhaps for Perra, or maybe they're urging Ons to be careful because here's a chance to get one of the breaks back. Advantage to the American, good serve. It's blocked back into play. The forehand from Jabeur to the double-handed backhand of the left-hander. Now the forehand sliced into the net then by Perra on her backhand side.
When you're already three love down, you want to try and take your chance. She had a couple. And both times, I think, maybe chose the wrong shot.
Well, it's a big day for Bernarda Perra. As Jabeur misses with her first serve, she's into the round of 16 at a Grand Slam event for the very first time in her career. Jabeur much more experienced when it comes to this stage of tournaments such as this. Mid-court ball now for Perra, and she's tried a drop shot, and she has executed it perfectly, and Jabeur coming forward. She was never going to get there in time, but she shows her football skills.
She's a good footballer, Jabeur. You often see her juggling the ball with a few keepy-uppies every now and again, but that was a nice drop shot, and she was well inside the baseline. It was a good time to do it. Makes it a lot easier if you're already halfway towards the net.
Another break point for Perra, and Jabeur's missed her first serve. A little bit of breeze evident again today. Not as much as yesterday at the moment. Forehand is good on the return from Perra. Another good forehand. The slice back under the pressure from Jabeur. Now the slice from Perra. She's come to the net. Jabeur's going to try and pass her. Oh, she does. Terrific angle again from Ons Jabeur.
Oh, that was a brilliant pass from Jabeur. She just pins a bit behind the baseline on the backhand side in the backhand corner. And just a flick of the left hand to pull the ball across court because Perra played a very good point.
Yeah, signs may be that Perra is starting to settle at least, but she needs to take advantage of that and get one of the breaks back here as Jabeur misses with a first serve, crashes against the awning at the back of the court. quickly grabs it with a bit of help from Perra. And they're ready again with the second serve. Forehand, deep return from Bernarda Perra. She's onto her forehand again, cross court to the backhand of Jabeur, who goes up the line. Slice backhand from Perra. Midcourt ball for Jabeur, who's now coming forward. Up goes the lob. Oh, it's good. It's really good. Jabeur caught in no man's land. Tried one of those awkward high backhand volleys. But that was beautifully placed and well thought out by Perra.
Yeah, really well thought out. Some good signs for her. She's thinking smartly because Jabeur was really closing the net very quickly, so the lob was doubly effective.
Break point again for Bernarda Perra. And Jabeur's first serve's a good one. The return is netted.
Beige got in touch. Afternoon, gentlemen. Lovely to hear you back on air. Listening while editing some work. 32 degrees C, where I am. Having a little PTSD after the Court 14 default episode yesterday. Yeah, it was contentious issues there.
Real shame.
Yeah. You never want to see someone defaulted.
It's deuce again. By far the longest game of the match so far. Second serve. Backhand replies deep to Jabeur, and it forces the error. Really good. Powerful return, and it rushed Jabeur into the error.
We're struggling more from this end, Jabeur, even though the wind is behind her. I suppose it enables Perra to really unload on the ball and just go after it.
Is this the moment she takes advantage of one of these break points? Well, Jabeur's missed her first serve again. Perra standing just behind her baseline for the second serve. Here it comes. Forehand return to the backhand side of Jabeur, who nets. And Bernarda Perra does have one of the breaks back.
I think she earned that. She played a lot of good points in that game. Much smarter choices of shot. Lovely drop shot, lovely lob. Some good signs.
Well, Bernarda Perra does have two wins against top 10 players in her career. She's 0 for 3, though, against top 10ers this year. You get all the stats, which is great from the WTA. For those of you interested in Jabeur's record against Americans, she's won 33 and lost 16, for what it's worth. Forehand return now to the backhand of Perra, who goes long as she tried to go up the line. Now, Bernarda, having got one of the breaks back, you've got to really preserve and respect your serve here.
It's funny, those stats, we always used to keep a track of Andy Murray's unbelievable record against French players. At one stage, it was something like 34-0 since Songa beat him in Australia.
Oh, by the way, what a return from Ons Jabeur. Backhand winner up the line. Little clinch of the fist. Had a good record against lefties as well, aside from Rafa, I seem to remember.
That's right, yeah, lefties who weren't Rafa.
Yes. Missed first serve, and Perra, having worked so hard to get one of the breaks back, is at love 30. Second serve, backhand reply from Jabeur. She was a bit tucked up, but then Perra caught in two minds, just screaming now behind her baseline, showing understandable frustration at love 40.
It was one of those weird moments where I think Perra thought her serve might have been out and then wasn't quite prepared when the ball came back to hit the next shot.
1-3, love 40. Perra clips the top of the tape. The ball bounces inside the service box. You get another first serve. I was watching the juniors yesterday and forgot for a moment that in the juniors you carry on if the serve clips the top of the tape. That first serve goes into the net.
Are they all completely au fait with that now?
I think so. I didn't notice anybody being surprised by it. Backhand return from Jabeur. She's onto that backhand again. A slice backhand down the middle of the court. It's going to drift long from Perra. And goodness me, well, frustration, annoyance, whatever you want to call it. But Perra, having got a break back, is broken again. And after 20 minutes, Ons Jabeur leads here in the first set by 4-1. And Beatrice Haddad-Meyer is 3-1 up in the first set against Sara Cerebes-Tormo.
What do you think about that, the no-let rule, Marcus?
You know, I've oscillated, Simon. I used to think I really liked the idea of it, and then I watched my son playing some junior matches and losing some key points to it and thinking, what a ridiculous rule. But if I was to weigh up all the pros and cons, I'd quite like to see it in the sport. What about you?
I mean, it would knock a few seconds off a match. I don't think it knocks enough time off a match to make it worthwhile just on that basis. You can argue that, you know, in a rally, when you hit the tape, you carry on going, so why not do it on the serve? I think I've made this point before. I don't like luck. I don't like that much luck in tennis. Or, you know, it's one thing to have, you know, a bit of wind blow in your face and all that sort of stuff. But if you, on a big point, if you hit, if somebody hits a serve and it drops stone dead over the other side, I feel like that's a little bit unfair and it's too much luck. And they don't even themselves out, those net courts. That's the problem.
Yeah, I take that on board. And especially, let's say it's...
Especially if it's your son.
And it always seems to be, oh, Dad, it's always me. So, I think eventually those things even out, but not on the given day, no. And I totally understand that if it's championship point here next Sunday, and we've had an epic match between, let's say, Carlos Alcaraz and Sasha Zverev, whoever it is, and on championship point, Zverev clips the top of the net and the ball drops down, that would be a pretty awful way to win a slam. That said, think of all the talking points. I think you might bring other people into the sport because they'd almost be fascinated in a morbid sort of way about that.
Well, I know whenever we talk about this, Chris Bowers likes to bring up the famous Ivan Lendl, Boris Becker. I think it was in Stuttgart.
Yes.
It was in five sets. They had an enormous rally on match point in the tiebreak. To win it, and Becker ended up winning it on a drop on a net cord that dropped stone dead over the other side. My defense against that is that they had enough time in that rally to hit a winner properly. So there's a bit of luck at the end, but it's not the end of the world. If it was a serve, I think I would go absolutely crazy.
It's a good talking point, and it's one of those. I mean, I'd go either way with it. I'd have to say, but it's probably better off where we are now. Now, Jabeur, 15-30, 4-1. We've had so many breaks of serve so far in this match. Can Pera get a second on the Jabeur serve and bring herself back into this set? Well, she's replying brilliantly on the forehand. Oh, she got hold of that.
Thumped it. She's standing way inside the baseline to return that serve. And that's the thing when you play left-handed, you have to adjust a lot with your serving. You know, you normally have the way you want to serve, where you go to, and if you forget and you kick it to their forehand, you're going to get punished.
And that was right into Pera's hitting zone. So it's 15-40, and there's another good return that is sliced back into play on the forehand by Jabeur, who's mid-court. She's put up a high lob, and Pera's going to smash that away.
Jabeur.
And she's broken Jabeur for a second time. And that means that Jabeur does indeed now lead by 4-2. Still has the advantage of the break. Sorry,
son. She's clearly got the power to hurt Jabeur. It's just a case of harnessing it and using it at the right time. But those two cracking forehand returns did the damage. Yeah, she's obviously, was she in the fourth round for the first time in a slam, but showing what she's capable of. I remember seeing her a few years ago. I think she played... she's been around... How old is Pera now?
She's 28, I believe. I think these two are almost exactly the same age.
I think I saw her play Laura Robson back in the day. And I remember thinking... Because they were both left-handers and the contrast of how they were playing was interesting.
Well, that would make sense. Laura, who was here this week... Laura's busy these days. There's a double fault from... Pera represents the worst possible start for her to this seventh game. Come on, Bernarda. You've broken Jabeur twice, and yet you're still a breakdown in this set. You know what you've got to focus on. She's serving to the backhand of Jabeur. Deep return, forehand down the middle of the court from Pera. Cross court on her backhand to the forehand of Jabeur that's long.
I may have been making that up. Maybe it wasn't Laura, but... Definitely, I remember seeing her when she was quite young and quite raw in terms of her experience. But you could see then that she had some talent.
Laura Robson, for those of you who may not know, was a British phenom. Won junior Wimbledon at the age of 14. Sliced backhand from Jabeur. Mid-court ball for Pera. She's coming in behind her approach shot and she's reached out for a forehand volley, but she's going to get past. Oh, you trade with Ons Jabeur in the forecourt at your peril. Beautiful slice backhand pass from the Tunisian.
Yeah, didn't panic on when she got to that ball because she was moving quickly. It's quite easy to overhit when you're doing that, but she just played a delicate slice across her. Yeah, I mean, Laura, what a talent she was. Such a shame. I watched her when she was number 27 in the world, beating Kim Clijsters and Lee Nahr at the US Open.
Yeah.
Just injuries, really. It was the wrist injuries that did for her.
Yeah, she never really had a chance as a pro. As Simon mentioned, she had a good run at the US Open. She had a good run at Wimbledon. That's a good serve from Parra. The wind may be just becoming a little bit of a factor. Again, the breeze that seems to be rustling Jabeur's skirt at times and just causing her a little bit of irritation. Lots of wrist problems, and she finally announced her retirement. Was it last at the back year? End of last year, yeah. I would say. But she's busy. She's an excellent commentator. She's also a tournament director. She's gone back to England this week. She's in charge of the Nottingham tournament. There's a great drop shot from Jabeur, but, well, Parra got to it, but all she could do was shovel the ball back across the court, and Jabeur had all the time in the world to whip away a forehand winner.
No depth on that approach.
Mesdames et messieurs, veuillez ne pas manifester jusqu'à la fin de la point. Merci.
She's telling them not to cheer between the points, while the point's going on.
I thought she said something about bread there. Did she just say pan?
I think it was poire.
Oh. I thought someone was eating their sandwich too loudly.
Did you miss your breakfast?
I did, actually.
I'm quite hungry myself.
Yeah. Pan and poire. Okay, got it. Guess what? Another break point, 30-40. The return, drop shot return, and Parra. She got there in plenty of time, but she's hooked her forehand long. She has been broken again. And Ons Jabeur will sit down leading by 5-2 in the second set.
Halfway there to making this competitive Parra. Got the weapons, got the shots, and has shown that already, but a few too many loose errors and a bit of extra nous from Jabeur when she needs it. It's difficult. Yeah, I think back to Laura. It's easy with hindsight to say this, but we've seen it a lot with players when they have a wrist injury. Next time I see someone with a wrist injury, I would just say to them, stop.
Yeah.
Stop now until it's completely healed. Do not try and come back until it's ready. Because we've seen it so many times where players come back, they push it, or they play through that first little bit of pain because you think it's okay, and it causes, untold problems down the road. And it's such a shame that Laura Robson couldn't fulfil the career that she'd promised to do.
I'm so pleased that she appears to have totally accepted it. I mean, I can only imagine what it must be like. I mean, there are all sorts of levels you get to in the game, of course, but there she was, age 14, winning Junior Wimbledon. The world is her oyster. She breaks onto the professional scene and looks the part. And then suddenly it's taken away from you, Simon. You could easily sort of go and hide under a stone for years after that.
Yeah, it probably did take her quite a while to come to terms with the fact that she was no longer a professional athlete. That's really difficult. We see it in all sports, don't we? When people retire, how do they adjust to their new life? It's like coming out of prison, almost. How do you adjust to life in the real world? But it'll be interesting to see how she enjoys or how she goes as being a tournament director, because there's no experience with that. You have to go straight in at the deep end, and just because you're a tennis player doesn't mean you understand all the things that go with it. She'll have to learn on the job.
Well, she'll suddenly realise how diva-ish some of those tennis players are, and she'll think, oh, I might have been a bit like that back in the day. Right, Jabeur's serving for the set, but it would be no surprise to see her broken for what would be a third successive time. She's at 15-30. Holding serve here is an absolute premium. 5-2, 15-30, 30 minutes on the clock. Jabeur serves to the backhand of the left-hand. A short return, Jabeur comes in. She's at the net and, well, not the greatest pass in the world, but good enough from Parra. Again, she's got power, sufficient power to force an error on the volley from Jabeur.
Yeah, and when you're playing a left-hander, you've got to remember that she's left-handed when you're approaching the net, especially. Chose to go to the forehand, which is dangerous. I mean, she's dangerous on both sides, but I think the forehand has more variety, Parra.
More break points then for Parra. 5-2, 15-40. First serve into the net from Jabeur. The second serve is onto the forehand. It was hit with power. Now she'll go across court, Parra, with that forehand to the backhand of Jabeur. Good depth from Jabeur. She's there again. Slice backhand up the line. Slice from Jabeur. Parra. And as Jabeur tries to go up the line with a forehand, she gets it wrong. She puts it into the tram lines. She has been broken for a third successive service game, losing track of all these breaks. So now it's Parra at 3-5. Come on, I don't want to sound biased, but I just want Bernarda Parra actually to hold serve.
Yeah, consolidate the break back. It's interesting, Jabeur didn't get behind that ball. She wasn't in the right position to hit it. And when you're as an amateur, one of the things that really helps you remember how to be in the right position is if you just think about being behind the ball, then you have so many more options. If you're trying to reach it from the side or behind, you're limited in what you can do. And Jabeur just got her feet wrong for once there.
Yeah, that's a very good visual to remember. Get behind the ball. Well, Jabeur was behind the ball with that return. Now she play, oh, she's got that wrong as well. She's flailing at times with that forehand.
It's the sort of thing that like, your parent, when watching, would be sort of saying from behind the court, just get behind the ball. And you're like, you get behind the ball.
Well, exactly. I wouldn't mind that. It's more like other expletives if I try. I don't say anything anymore. And
it's very sensible.
Yeah. Perra with a good first serve, a floating return, and Perra was coming in behind the serve. She had to go backwards. She is behind the baseline now with a forehand to the backhand of Jabeur, who goes up the line. Slice on the backhand from Perra. Forehand this time is a good one from Jabeur.
Yeah, overhit it last time, really held on to that ball to make sure it goes in. What do you like in the aftermath of matches? Do you sort of have you learned how to just? Well, you have to sort of
keep away.
Learn how your children respond to things. But do you listen or do you offer advice if asked, or how does it work?
Well, if he loses, we don't talk for a while. his choice. I'll just stay back.
Yeah.
This is the highs and lows. When he wins, it's just great. And you can bond a bit. You talk about. Hopefully, you've got to be honest about it. I mean, it's an important point I will make about that in just a moment as a backhand from Perra goes into the net. The one thing with my son, my younger son, who's 17 now, playing on some ITF matches, he still kind of thinks that if he wins a match, he must have played well, and if he's lost a match, he must have played badly. And it's not that way at all. And he does need to realise that sometimes you can lose and be almost more positive than if you've had a scrapey, fortunate victory.
Yeah, sometimes you can play really well and you're just beaten by a slightly better player.
15-30 here. Perra serving to stay in the set at 3-5. Oh, double fault to bring up set points. And the other problem with the juniors these days, with all the computerised rankings and everything else, they can look and see what their opponent's done, this, that and the other, and they can either lull them into a full sense of security, or they think, oh my goodness, this guy's unbelievable. And there was a classic example, I'll tell you about it in a moment, from Edinburgh last week, as Perra serves at 15-40, backhand return down the middle of the court, lofting backhand from Perra, who's onto the forehand side again. Jabeur makes room for herself on her forehand, and now she's going to play a slice backhand to the backhand side of Perra. Slice on the backhand from Jabeur. The forehand down the line from Perra is just long. And Ons Jabeur, after 34 minutes, has the first set. A set full of service breaks goes the way of the Tunisian by 6-3. And on court, Suzanne Longlen, Beatrice Haddad-Meyer leads Cyrus Arribes-Tormo by 4-2 in the first set.
Yeah, just a little bit more consistent from Jabeur. Probably the difference between the two. Perra, plenty of good things, but just occasionally overhitting or missing, and occasionally Jabeur coming out with a little bit of magic. But some encouragement, I think, for Perra going into the second set.
Yeah, just to finish on that point, where, you know, the juniors now can look at the rankings, it's all there, the head-to-heads, who's done this, who's done that, etc., etc. And last week, Luca went up to Edinburgh as the number one seed. Now, he, without making excuses, he'd cut his hand, so he had a problem with his left hand. But he says, oh, the guy I'm playing, he's ranked 700. He should be okay. Anyway, gets crunched by him, and the guy goes on to win the whole thing. And, you know, it's all sorts of reasons why that particular player was lowly ranked. I said, stop looking at the rankings, just focus on yourself.
Yeah, it's a lesson to be learned, isn't it? I mean, Luca is clearly a lot better than I was, but I mean, after a defeat, I would take 10 minutes. It would be not worth talking to me for 10 minutes if it was after a bad loss. But then I was fine. I'd shaken it off, then you can talk about it. So you'd have to learn how your child works as a parent. I've been. My son plays a little bit of tennis, but not competitive. He's only 9 anyway. But we'll see how he goes. But what I think is an interesting dynamic is you're the parent, and you're obviously a parent, and you're desperate for your son to do well and be happy and stuff, or daughter. But you're also sometimes a sounding board in terms of the tennis. But when your son or daughter is much better than you ever were, it's a little bit difficult to sort of talk tennis in some ways. So that's why you need to be able to hand it over to a good coach and let them do the work. Because I was talking to... I actually played yesterday morning with a friend of mine who plays at the Tennis Club de Paris here. a French guy called Renault. Renault, if you're listening, thank you very much for the hit. And show me the club. He was saying that with his son and daughter, just in a different sense, you know, he's going to university in Barcelona to a business school. His son Hugo, and he's been trying to tell him to do this for ages, but it was only when someone else who'd been to business school had a word, who he respected, who wasn't his parents, that he actually listened.
Yeah. Well, that's absolutely true, because more often than not, they will not listen to you if you are their parents. As the
Kenza
second set gets underway with a spot of magic initially from Bernarda Pera, and then Jabeur showing her touch again. A wonderful touch to make it 15-all.
That's why we see so many problems between parents and their children on the tour. You know, that relationship, or the ability or inability to divide being a parent and a coach, is really tough.
In comes Pera and comfortably puts away a forehand volley with Jabeur going the other way. So I wonder if this pattern of breaks of serve is going to continue into the second set. Yeah, I mean, I don't try and teach him anything technical about the tennis, but the one thing I sort of learnt by obviously working in this business is just the mental approach. And I look, for example, at that wonderful quote that's along the standover to our right, victory belongs to the most tenacious. Little comments like that. There are so many mental aspects to the game that are important. Oh, we're getting wonderful angles from both players. Another drop shot from Jabeur, but in came Pera, and this time, being left-handed, she could just guide the ball back across court with the narrowest of angles. Jabeur well beaten.
Yeah, it was well done by Pera. The actual drop shot that Jabeur's hitting is quite interesting, because it's from the backhand corner on the backhand side cross court. That's not normally the go-to play for a drop shot. It's usually down the line, or on the forehand side it might be cross court. Backhand cross court is not very, very often played. Yeah, I mean, just juniors in general, I remember, you know, you see all sorts of stuff between parents and kids at junior tournaments and at all sorts of levels. I remember one guy who's no longer with us, unfortunately, called Paul Banks, whom I used to play a lot of doubles with. He was so badly behaved on court as a sort of 15, 16-year-old that his dad, who was quite a nice guy from what it seemed, I just remember I have visions of him doing a wheel spin in the car park as he left him at about 2 o'clock in the afternoon one day saying, "I'm not coming back."
Oh, I can't drive you mad. Two very good serves from Jabeur have taken her from 15-40 back to Jews. But now a wonderful forehand, crunching forehand winner from Pera brings up another break point.
Hit that inside-out return a couple of times, Pera. It's moving away from Jabeur. Really tough to get back.
Well, Simon mentioned that there were some encouraging signs for Pera, and she's dug that ball back into play. Ooh. And how often is it that you just dig a ball back and you force an unexpected error from your opponent? Jabeur coming in, nets. She's been broken again, and it's Pera with the early advantage at the start of the second set.
Yeah, it's unusual to see Jabeur miss that kind of shot. She's sort of sliding forward, usually with very good hands, can sort of put the ball where she wants, but she made a mistake. Just to come to the juniors, come back to juniors for a second, message from Trace in the Republic of Macedonia saying, "Dear Marcus," what about me? "Greetings from Macedonia. Love your commentary throughout the slam. You are a sheer joy to listen to. Also delighted that you're mentioning juniors once again, like last year. Remember Kalin Ivanovsky, Pomegranate, your adopted junior who made it to Wimbledon quarterfinals? Well, since then, he has slashed 1,300 places in the ranking. Playing on the ITF Tour, he's moved from 1,709 to 415. I'm hoping next year he'll play on the Challenger Tour, eventually making it to the qualifying weeks of the Slam, and be successful so that you can claim you discovered him."
Definitely.
"Until such glorious times, keep up the good work, and looking forward to your commentary at Wimbledon. Trace."
Well, that's wonderful to hear from you, Trace. And yeah, good luck to all juniors from all over the world. It was great to watch some of them in action yesterday. You know, some essentially thrilled to have made it through to the main draw at a Grand Slam event. Others dreaming of going all the way, such as Hannah Klugman. I was watching another Brit yesterday, Ollie Bonding, who's actually been coached by Wayne Black this week, who got into a spot of bother with the umpire, because, of course, there is a rule now that you can do a spot of subtle on-court coaching, but it cannot be a conversation. And between Ollie and Wayne yesterday, they forgot that and were admonished.
Yeah, because it's just supposed to be, you know, you're walking past and they say, you know, play for the forehand or whatever.
Yeah, the coach can, but you as a player can't respond, which is a little unnatural in a way. Into the net from Bernarda Pera. He's got the early break, but we know just how fragile she is on serve, and it's love 30.
Arvin says, hi, Marcus and Simon. Super pumped to be woken up with some Ons magic here in Philadelphia. Wow, that is early. Funny Ons story incident for me. I play pickleball double simply because I just can't serve in tennis and I'm not athletic. Last year, I was trying to hit a drop shot service return and it fell short of the net, and I loudly screamed, teach me how to do it, Ons. Much to the confusion of my opponents who had no idea who Javert was. If only us mere mortals could execute even a tiny fraction of the Ons shots.
Well, she's just conjured a little more magic. It was an ill-advised drop shot from Bernarda Pera. Javert was all over it. It's love 43 breakback points at the start of the second set. First serve was, well, it looked long, but the point continues, and in comes Pera with a crunching double-handed backhand winner with her plus one shot.
Well, if she could dig herself out of this hole, it would be a very good start to this set.
One love, 15-40. And Pera's serving to the forehand of Javert. Off balance, she gets a deep return into play. Now she's going to slice on the backhand to the double-hander of the American who went down the middle of the court. She does so again to the forehand of Javert, going back behind Pera. And catching the sideline. It's another break of the Pera serve. And we are back on serve at the start of the second set.
It doesn't even feel like it's because she's serving badly or playing particularly badly. It's just that the opponent... it seems to be much more comfortable on returns at the moment. I see Max is setting quiz questions.
Oh, not already. Oh, my goodness me.
To do with Javert and African women. She's one of nine African women to reach a Grand Slam quarterfinal in the Open Era. Can you name the other eight? They're all South African. I think the answer's probably no.
Well,
I've got two.
Eight, so, hang on, we've got eight. We've got to find eight other
South African women to reach a quarterfinal of a slam in the Open Era.
Well, Amanda Kurtzer has got to be one straight away.
She's one in Australia, definitely.
The drop shot from Pera is good. Jabir's got that, up goes the lob. Jabir's got to go running back. She's going to try a tweener. She can't quite manage it.
She didn't quite get back far enough to hit the tweener. You knew it was coming, but she was struggling to get back. Bending over a double a bit at the back.
Zero pens.
Looking pretty jaded after that point.
Yeah, crowd loved it. Good vibrant atmosphere for a Monday morning at Roland Garros. Philippe Chatrier around about half full at the moment.
There have been a few players, haven't there, suffering from illness during this tournament, whether it be viral illness or food poisoning and things. And you never know how someone's feeling until afterwards. With them.
Yeah, Pegula had the food poisoning early on. Of course, Elena Rybakina had to pull out because of the virus. She was the most notable casualty. Forehand now from Pera. Javert gives herself room on her forehand side, and then a lofted ball right onto the Javert baseline. The drop shot now from Pera. In comes Javert. She's got there, and she's put it away with another acute angle.
Yeah, I don't think there's any issue with Javert. She was bent double at the back of the court after that previous point, but showed good speed to get in and... so adept at playing the right shot off a drop shot. I'm going for Marianne de Schwartz.
Good.
I don't know if she got to a quarterfinal though.
That sounds like a good answer
to me. She beat Steffi Graf. Played Steffi Graf at Wimbledon once. She may even have beaten her. Maybe she didn't beat her.
It's quite a fiendish question for a Monday morning.
Yeah, it's pretty tough.
I have to say, I think he's annoyed because he came up with a question about the FA Cup over the weekend and we ignored it.
Oh, the F and the A.
Yes, yeah, that was too difficult.
It was a bit tenuous.
Forehand reply from Pera, sliced back into the court by Javert, and then Pera goes long.
She's a little bit careless at times on the short balls in particular. That, you know, she was in a good position, she couldn't quite get it right.
Beatrice Haddad-Meyer is about to serve for the first set on court Suzanne Longlin against Sara Cerebes-Tormo at 5-4. Here's Javert, 1-1, 30-15, having won the first set by 6-3 and missing with her first serve that clips the tape, bounces once, almost hits a photographer, and then bounces along that photography pit and is caught by a gentleman in a red shirt. Another wild return on the forehand side from Pera. We talk about the elegance that left-handers naturally have. I immediately think of David Gow, the cricketer, whenever I think of elegant left-handers, but sometimes he could be a little bit casual. And as you rightly said, there are too many errors leaking off that admittedly elegant forehand. Now she's returning with a high backhand. She just blocked that. into play. She's there again is Perra, giving lots of height again, but getting it all wrong. Floats long. It's a comfortable hold of serve for Jabeur. How important might that prove to be, considering the problems Perra's having with her own serve? And they sit down on serve at 1-2 in the second.
Yeah, it definitely feels like Jabeur's in charge now. There are the relief that comes with winning the first set. One of Max's stats is that she's won 24 of 25 matches, I think, when she's won the first set at... I'll go back and find exactly that stat, but she's obviously a good front runner. Won 24 of her last 25 matches on clay when she's won the opening set. Mm. Only defeat this time against Magda Linette last year in the first round. Oh, I love David Gower. He was my favourite cricketer as a kid in terms of batsman, English batsman.
Did he not frustrate you sometimes? Yeah. He'd waft at one outside the off stump?
I mean, I sort of really, really liked him, so I'd get nervous when he was batting because you just never knew. It was either, you could tell pretty much early on whether he was going to play well. He was either going to get out for nothing or go on and get a big score. And yeah, when he was at his best, when he was in his best form, he made it look so easy. Just like some of the great tennis players out there.
Was he your sporting hero then?
McEnroe was my sporting hero as a kid. Huh? One of them. Gower was my favourite English batsman. But I was lucky enough to go to a lot of test matches at Lord's when I was in my... like from the age of about 10 to 14, 15.
Prenez place,
and I saw
rapidement,
some great West Indians. And
les joueurs sont
Imran
prêtes.
Khan, you know, it's Pakistan. Merci. He's a great Indian bowler and batsman. And really, that time of cricket history was amazing.
It was. I think that was the golden era with the amazing West Indian team of the 80s with all those fast bowlers as Perra comes in. That's a well-constructed point by the American, and she finishes it off with a neat little backhand volley at the net, having pushed Jabeur from side to side.
Delia's got in touch from, I imagine, South Africa. Or maybe not. But she says, good to have you on this morning, gents. Sandra Reynolds is one, but that was 1960 at Wimbledon. I think Max said open era.
Yes.
Which would be 68 onwards, but that's still... actually, that's someone I haven't heard of, Sandra Reynolds.
Yep, Delia is from South Africa. She's been in touch on a regular basis. Morning to you, Delia. We can just about still say good morning here for another 4 or 5 minutes. And that's from Perra clips the tape and just goes over. Actually, my cricketing hero, he was also a left-hander, only ever played one test match for England. And I get so angry about, you know, if you're good enough to play once for your country, surely you should be given more than one chance. That's a terrific thumping forehand return from Jabeur.
Genza.
So it's 1-2, 15-all. Alan Butcher.
Yeah.
Do you remember him? Played for Surrey and then for Glamorgan. Played one test match, one one-day international. He played in an amazing test match, actually, at the Oval in 1979 against India. It was one of the great tests. High-scoring affair that went deep into the fifth day. England finally won it. But he wasn't helped on his way out to bat as Perra goes down the middle and a short return should be thumped away, and she's missed it. Perra, a really straightforward put away, and she's put it the wrong side of the tram line.
That was one of those inexplicable misses. I mean, she had a whole half of the court to put that in, and she chose to hit it close to the sideline when she didn't need to and missed. Shocker.
Yep. And it could prove very costly. 1-2, 15-30. I'll come back to the advice that Butcher was given as he went out to bat in just a moment. That return is long from Jabeur, although the umpire's quickly down off her chair to check this call.
I think it was out.
It was. No harm in coming down and checking. We've mentioned a couple of times the Michael Emer incident recently where he went crazy. The umpire refused to come down off his chair, and when Emer was subsequently broken in the game, he then, well, inexcusably, of course, he then attacked the umpire's chair. That's a miss hit again on the forehand side from Perra, but had the umpire come down, I think he would have defused the situation there and then, which is not excusing Emer's subsequent behaviour, but he's not that sort of a player as a general rule. Anyways, Butcher's going out to open the batting with Geoffrey Boycott, one of the great England cricketers of all time. Perra serves at 30-40. Backhand reply from Jabeur's deep to the forehand. That's a better forehand from Perra. Now she's going to slice her backhand. So too is Jabeur. Short ball. Perra gets there. She could be passed here, though, and she is. Oh, there's danger when you come meandering forward and you offer all sorts of opportunities to Ons Jabeur, and she whipped a forehand pass comfortably.
Jabeur had her on a string Yeah, she just pulled her forward and then got the response she wanted and whipped the forehand cross court.
So Geoffrey Boycott in his Yorkshire accent as they're walking out to open the innings against India says, "Hey lad, this is test match cricket. This is far different from county cricket. You just be careful."
Thanks, Geoffrey.
Just feeling bad enough as it is. And he hung around. He was quite an attacking player, Alan Butcher, but obviously he thought, well, this is test match cricket, as Geoffrey said. So he hung around for about an hour and a half and made 14 and then got out.
Zero
and didn't play his natural game. He made 14, then he made 20 in the second innings. It was the last test match of the summer and he was never selected again. Although there is, I think it's a true story as well, about 2 years later, come back to